Welcome to The Creative Shift. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. So today I want to talk about defining your creative voice. And this is a critical part of the process of what it means to share your work, of ensuring that your work has an impact and reaches people and is reshareable by people. Before I jump in, I want to invite you to a free workshop I'm giving on this on Tuesday, April 19th at 1 p.m. Eastern. So if you want to register for that, it's a one-hour workshop. You can just go to wegrowmedia.com/voice. That's wegrowmedia.com/voice. And that'll be a fun kind of group chat digging into a lot of these topics. So again, wegrowmedia.com/voice. So, you know, all that I do is talk to writers and creators, and so many of them struggle with understanding how they can build a presence in the marketplace. And there's a lot that goes into this. And I want you to try to imagine, everyone has their own challenges when it comes to this. But I want you to imagine if you felt the following. If you knew exactly how to describe who you are as a writer or a creator or an artist. If you really felt you had the capacity to create a nearly infinite amount of content that illustrated this. If you felt that how and what you shared was unique to you, that it represented you and your authenticity in terms of either who you are or what you create. If you felt that when you shared, you got engagement from other people, that the way that you shared encouraged people to interact with you in a positive way. If you knew where you fit, that you fit into the marketplace at all, and which marketplace, yet you had a nice little niche that felt like it was your own. Another thing that people struggle with is if you felt proud of what you shared. Without feeling as though you were seeking attention or you were gloating. And this is one that comes up a lot, is a lot of people sort of grew up being told, don't talk about yourself, or if you're talking about yourself, you're gloating. It's a huge challenge that people have when it comes to the idea of being public online with their creative work. Another one is feeling comfortable having your voice or your identity being public. A lot of us have developed a way of sharing this stuff privately or in small groups or a very, very controlled setting, but doing it publicly feels like a big risk when it's online. Feeling of a sense of permission to share your work, and this comes up a lot in so many different ways. So many writers I talk to are awesome and they're creating good stuff, but they say, oh, but you know, my book isn't out yet, I can't share yet, or something like that. And the last one is one I bring up a lot and is critical, that you feel a sense of safety in how you share online. That safety is defined by you and you alone, but it's a critical, essential part of this. So a lot of times when a writer or creator looks to solve these challenges, they're looking to see what seems to be working in the marketplace. And let me tell you what the solution isn't. It's not the latest trend. And we look to the latest trend for good reasons. We like to find a bit of a shortcut. We say, oh, if we can find the latest trend and just start doing that, well, I'll save myself the embarrassment of failing, of doing the thing that everyone else is doing is pathetic, of fumbling. We all want to find the one thing we can do that will suddenly just skyrocket our success. It's never a hashtag. And that's the kind of thing, again, we think of, well, if I have 12 followers and I share something, how are people going to find it? Let me find the right hashtag. Hashtags are fine. The issue with hashtags is that the people who are following them are often going to be your least engaged audience. So even if you find a hashtag or 10 hashtags that kind of speak to your ideal audience, they're not totally understanding who you are and what you share yet. So they might like something or engage with it, but they're not going to be your biggest fan. That's a long process. So that's one thing. It's not some secret social media button. It's not some algorithm, some insight that you and you alone have about Instagram's algorithm. It's not a TikTok dance, I don't think. And it's not just hiring a virtual assistant to do it for you. All of these things can be a part of a much larger strategy. There's a wonderful place for having a VA, or using hashtags, or doing a TikTok dance, or following trends. But they're not the solution to these bigger problems of the challenges of how you share your work, what you create, and why, in a manner that is going to speak to people and going to be engaging with them. And to me, the most powerful tool that you have in your arsenal is simply your voice. And I think that some of you might hear that and think, duh. Others might think, you know, that type of thing where we know our voice when it comes to our craft. When it comes to your writing, crafting that voice is something you know might take years, years of practice, years of completing work, years of study. But I think that there's a similar practice that has to happen in terms of sharing your voice just publicly, of how you communicate who you are. And I think it's a matter of defining your voice. It's a matter of embracing your voice, which I think is a big challenge for people, having that certainty and that confidence that I can and should be sharing my voice, and sharing that voice, really putting it out there, which is a terrifying thing for people, because a lot of us have social anxiety of one form or another. And the bottom line is that on a random Monday, it feels more safe a lot of times to not share your voice than it does to share it and worry, what if I said the wrong thing? What if no one reacts to it? What if whatever? And it becomes an anxiety-reducing thing to not talk about your creative work, which is kind of a problem because you create this for the best reasons. You create your writing or your art because you are compelled to. You feel it can bring joy or help to someone's life. And it's something that you want to be known for. You want it to be out there. And this has really been my obsession. This is what my work is about. It's about this idea of how do you share what you create? And that's a big part of what your voice is. It's also showing what you care about. That's another part of your voice. It is how you share, which is a lot of choice that we have. It's a lot of times why people don't share. They feel like there's so many options, they don't want to do it wrong. It's also how you show up for others. It's how you engage with others. It's how you have a presence in other people's lives. And this is the part of voice we don't always think about. We think about, what will my tweet be? What will be in my newsletter? What do I do a video of? But if we think about real life, real in-person life, the voice that you have with your family, with your friends, with your community, it's not just what you say. It's how you show up for them. It's your demeanor. It's your values. It's how those things come across. That is a critical part of voice. And we will ratchet this back up to the idea of author platform or book marketing or putting your creative work out there. That aspect of your voice is just as critical. And again, it's not something a hashtag is going to solve. It's not something that copying a script is going to solve, or just hiring someone saying, hey, can you create a whole bunch of Instagram posts for me, is going to solve. Because that is much more about the full-bodied engagement of who you are as a person and how your work will connect with someone in that way. So recently, I've been going back into my hobby of doing family research, and I've had this hobby for a long, long, long time. So I have just hundreds of hours of interviews with family members and, you know, figuring out the family tree and doing research on all different places that distant relatives, you know, where they lived, and going through old photos and old videos. And recently, I've been thinking about both of my grandfathers, both of whom passed away before I was born. My father's father passed away in the, I think it was like around 1970, 1971. It was a couple years before I was born, from health reasons. And my other grandfather passed away in 1965 in a car accident. So when I was cleaning out my parents' house a couple years back, I'd saved a whole bunch of stuff. And one of them was a box of my maternal grandfather's stamp collection. So I pulled it down and I never really went through it. I never really figured out, well, what's in here? And on the one hand, what's in there, nothing is valuable. No first day covers, no things mounted. It is a box of like, you know, a couple cigar boxes and then stamps ripped off of envelopes. And the context here, I think, is important. And we are going somewhere in terms of voice with all of this. So my mom grew up on the Lower East Side of New York City in the, you know, 40s and 50s and 60s. They lived in a tenement apartment. And what that is a one bedroom, I think they would call it like a railroad apartment. So the four of them, my grandmother, grandfather, mother, and her sister all slept in the same bedroom, which attached to the living room, which attached to the kitchen. In the kitchen was the bathtub. And there was no bathroom in the apartment. The bathroom that they used was in the hallway right outside the apartment. And it's funny, you know, my mom tells the story where the big benefit that my parents had, that my grandparents had negotiated, I'm not sure exactly how it worked, but they had their family had exclusive use of that hallway bathroom. I don't know what went on with the rest of the building. And that's how she grew up. And so they didn't really have a lot. And my grandfather worked really, I believe, one job his entire life. He worked at a bakery. He started working there in high school as a slicer in the back. And then as he got older, he became a driver. And eventually, you know, years later, he got his own route. And that was a big, big, big deal in their family because it meant more money. It meant, you know, they, you know, again, it's all relative, but that was a big deal. So he was driving bread to many, many different restaurants in the New York City area. So it brings us back to the stamp collection. And it was interesting because one thing I found was a lot of just stamps ripped off envelopes, but some of the more completed envelopes, not addressed to my grandfather or to that address. They were to his brothers or to restaurants. So what I had kind of pieced together from this is that for years, because I have envelopes from the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s, he would tell every family member, every friend, everyone that he would meet or have a connection with at a restaurant through the where he'd say, hey, if you get a letter from somewhere interesting in the world, save the envelope for me. I collect stamps. And he'd organized, not all of them, some of them into stamps by country or by region. And it was really amazing for me to think about this idea of this hobby giving him a little bright spot each week of checking in when he went to a bakery with whoever's contact was there. Hey, get any good stamps in? Got any stamps for me? Coming home and putting them in the boxes, sorting them probably, you know, midday. I think that a lot of times he had a, because he's delivering to bakeries, he had a nighttime route. So my mom told me he would be the one to cook breakfast in the mornings oftentimes because he'd come home, he'd cook breakfast, and I believe that for a better part of his career, he slept during the day. He had the opposite schedule as most people. And why I bring this up is through his collecting, he would have had to have had thousands of conversations with people about not just his hobby, I collect stamps, but about their connection to these stamps. When he's asking people about, do you have any interesting, you know, do you get any letters maybe were interesting? No doubt that would bring up conversations of, you know, I got a letter from my cousin who lives in Poland. Let me see if I can find it. And telling them about their loved one or where the letter came from or who they knew in that country or region of the United States. And they would have shared with him moments of discovery where they said, oh, here's an envelope. Is this any good to you? And he'd be like, oh my gosh, I don't have this one. Or I've never had a stamp from this country or this area before. And in his way, he would have been making connections with people. It's not just going back to the idea of what I talk about a lot, book marketing, not just, I wrote a book, this is what the book is about, buy it here. It's about sharing what you create and why. It's about sharing your voice. And again, that voice is not just about you, it is about the other person. And, you know, with my grandfather, again, I never met him. I have to imagine what his actual voice sounded like. And when you know very few things, we don't have a lot of media, we have a lot of still photos. The stamp collection was a way into me of thinking about his voice, of what he would talk about with people, of how he would bring people into what he cared about. And when I think about a writer or creator or artist today, looking at how do they share their work? How do they fit in the marketplace? What do they share on Instagram? Do they do a newsletter? What do they put into it? These are the things that I think about. A lot of people look at the idea of author platform and they think it's a waste of time because they want to assign a clear ROI, a clear return on investment. You know, hey, fine, I'll do a newsletter, but what can I expect in return? When will I get 1,000 subscribers? How many books will it sell me? And these are good questions. I don't begrudge anyone asking really hard questions like that. That's great. The thing is, you don't always get a great answer. And the problem that a lot of people have who have done well with this stuff is they can't assign a clear ROI. They say, you know, wow, how did that thing go viral? Or why do you have such a good following? And the person's like, I don't know. I share a lot. I share authentically. I can tell you what I did, but I didn't know it would lead to this. I kind of did what, you know, I learned along the way. Or I did one thing at a time. And that's why how we build strategy. It's what I work on with writers all the time. And it's how these little moments add up. It's this idea of understanding what you want to share. And to me, it's this idea of doubling down on it, that you have this voice, you know why you create, and you should do the work to figure out, well, how do I communicate that to other people? How do I show up to share that frequently? How do I turn that into conversations, not just quote unquote content? I was reminded of this the other day. I got a text message from my good friend, Jenny Nash, and she said, here is Diane Wren sharing a Dan Blank quote about the opportunity to create at our book launch party for her new book. And she shared a screenshot of a Zoom call with a whole bunch of people on it. And one of the little people is Diane holding up a post-it note. And I reached out to Diana, I reached out to Diana and asked her about this. And she said that she had read one of my newsletters a while back, and she saw this quote that read, how fortunate we are to have the opportunity to create. And she said she put it up right in the middle of her monitor on a post-it note, front and center. And that when she goes through challenging times with writing and all of the stuff she has to do about being an author, it reminds her to sort of shift her perception of things. And she shared a photo of me of her desk. And it was great because it was this typical writer's desk where there's a lot of post-it notes. There's like a map, like a park map. And then she clearly modified it to fit the narrative of her book. There are fingerless gloves. I'm always thinking of the writer whose hands are cold, but they need to type. There was an hourglass timer, thinking of like doing the Pomodoro technique. There was a stress ball, all of these things that are like, yeah, these are the tools of a writer. And all of this to say, your voice is an opportunity to create something special in how you share and what you share, but also in the moments that you have with other people. This is the part of an author platform I think is most overlooked. It's not just about putting content out there and getting a like or getting a reshare, although those things are great. It's about having the moments that make up our lives. And that's why I was looking at the stamp collection. It's why I love this idea of embracing your voice, of raising the volume of your voice, because so much can be created when that happens. Not just things that will benefit your book or your art, but that will create powerful moments for you and other people. All right. If you'd like to join me in conversation about this and more in my workshop, the workshop is Tuesday, April 19th. at 1 p.m. Eastern time, I believe. And you can sign up for that at wegrowmedia.com/voice. You can find me on social media at Dan Blank and, of course, at wegrowmedia.com. Thank you so much for listening until the end.